Welcome to another episode of the Entangling Web3 podcast. Today, we're thrilled to have Anurag Arjun joining us on the show. As one of the original co-founders of Polygon, which today has a market cap of nearly 7 billion, Anurag is a leading voice in the Web3 space. Now he's dedicated to building Avail, a self-described unification layer for Web3 infrastructure, aiming to address both blockchain scalability and interoperability. So today, we'll be asking Anurag what this idea of unification means and how it plays into the wider theme of modular blockchains. Anurag, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Very pleased to be here. Looking forward.
Hey, Anurag. Yeah, we're extremely excited to have you on as well. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Yeah, very good. And Aaron, obviously, Jack gave a little intro there. And the one thing that definitely stands out is co-founding Polygon. That is a huge claim. Everyone knows Polygon, right? They're one of the biggest companies, biggest projects in this space. We've actually had Colin Butler from Polygon on the show before, and we could spend an entire episode probably talking about Polygon, but we're not here to talk about Polygon today. And today's episode is about what you're currently working on. So what actually motivated you to move away from the Polygon project and build something new with Avail?
So actually, when I mentioned this, like in 2020, like Ethereum was changing its whole entire strategy. I don't think a lot of people remember, but Ethereum had this execution sharding roadmap. And in 2020 or 2019, they moved to a more roll-up centric roadmap. And so if you think of how blockchains have been constructed since 2014, like of course, Bitcoin was the first blockchain, but 2014 was when Ethereum, the first general purpose blockchain, came out. So if you look at how blockchains after that have been constructed, there this common theme of let's do bigger blocks or faster blocks, it's been like this series of L1 blockchains. So you can see EOS or Phantom or now Solana, for example. So all of these are different variants of how you construct this layer one blockchain. But rollups introduced this whole fundamentally new way of constructing blockchain. So instead of creating a whole brand new blockchain, you have this very secure base layer and you have like rollups on top. So rollups are also blockchains. They just rely on the base layer for things like security and a bunch of other things, right? Mm-hmm. And so what that changes in how we construct blockchains is it removes a lot of things that a chain developer needs to do. Like for example, if you want to do a new chain and new L1, of course you need to build all the execution environment and such, but you also need to bootstrap validators, you need to bootstrap cryptogenomic security, you need to create a token, you need to ensure the token is valuable, and so on. So it's a lot of work creating a new L1 blockchain, and you can see that in the, let's say, in the Cosmos ecosystem, where there's this long list of L1s that don't really have enough cryptogenomic security. And so when rollups came along, you had this whole new paradigm. Look at something like Base, for example. Like Base didn't build out an entire new chain from scratch. They took what Optimism had built and then the OP stack and then created their own brand with their new chain. And they focused on what was more important to them. Things like user acquisition, GTM, user adoption, and so on. And they've been pretty successful. And so the cost of spinning up a new chain using rollups have significantly decreased now. And so we are going into what we call a rollup-centric future of blockchains. And I sincerely believe that rollups are going to be how future blockchains will be created. Like the current mental model for rollups mostly is that these rollups are EVM rollups. This is not true. Rollups can be any sort of blockchains. Like the ones which are dominant are more EVM-centric, but you can already see Starkware with its Cairo VM, and you have like various other teams building things like Movement, Move rollups, like Risk Zero rollups, TypeScript rollups, you know, like Stacker Labs, Sovereign Labs. Anyways, I'm just trying to paint the picture that the rollup centric future is coming, and we are going to this world where the blockchain world will be these thousands or maybe hundreds of thousands of rollups. And of course, Polygon was also building ZKVM. It's also building something called Maiden. And so certainly there are solutions to that. But we also had, because of our learnings from Plasma before, we knew that infrastructure to support this rollup-centric future things like data availability, interoperability, etc. would be hugely beneficial. And so that is one of the primary reasons why we spun Avail out of Polygon, so that we could support not only Polygon rollups, but all rollups in general. So that's why like we partner with Arbitrum, Optimism, Starkware, ZK Sync, Polygon, and a variety of others. And so Avail is like credibly neutral infra for all rollups. And so we wanted this very credibly neutral brand or project, and which didn't align with one particular rollup brand.
That's a really nice summary, I think. And this tallies with what we've heard from other people who've come on the show. As Alec mentioned, Colin Butler came on from Polygon. We've had numerous other people on. Everyone's talking about rollups, right? That seems to be the, as you said, the rollups are seemingly the future, especially in terms of, you know, how we're going to scale blockchains, how we're going to use them at global scale. And you mentioned there, I think you touched on this idea of monolithic blockchains, like something like Bitcoin, right? That's a classic example. So for anyone, you know, listening who doesn't know, Bitcoin, when it was released, funnily enough, it has everything to do with the blockchain in one big monolithic piece of software. And that's what we mean by monolithic, right? It's single stack, a single kind of software project that has everything in it. So everything from the mining functions, the hashing, the validation of transactions, the propagation of transactions to other peers on the network, transaction building, even had a wallet in there, right? And miners don't necessarily need to be operating these kind of small wallets. They would typically handle their keys in different ways. So when we think of a monolith, I think the original Bitcoin code is what people will think of. So what does modular blockchains actually mean? What does modularity mean in this context? Because I can see from Avail, which we'll deep dive into Avail a little bit more after, but just on an abstract conceptual level, what do you think it means for a blockchain to be modular?
Yeah, so I mean, any technology, when it goes through, like when it starts and then progresses, it necessarily undergoes this sort of modularization. I had this panel long back when someone was talking about motorcycles for some reason. And you can think of motorcycle, that's a very good analogy in a sense, like the first motorcycle, the manufacturer might have built it from front to back, right? Like in the same factory, and like it's a monolith in that sense. But as the technology matures, you get into specialization, right? So some factory builds the wheels, some factory builds the engines. So essentially, why that happens is because not one manufacturer is an expert on building the entire motorcycle. Someone becomes specialized in wheels, someone becomes specialized in the engine, and so on, right? Like, so in general, every technology industry goes through that cycle where initially everything is very monolithic in the sense that everything is built in one place, and then you specialize because you now know the problem space, the design space better, and specialized players can focus on what they best do. And it also increases efficiencies of production, efficiencies of running, like quantitatively also it leads to decreases in costs, so on and so forth. And a lot of that can be applied to any technology space, but in general, blockchains is, you know, going through that phase at the moment. So that's why the first blockchains were necessarily monoliths, but there were a lot of inefficiencies. In general, I mentioned that creating a new layer one blockchain involves, of course, creating the execution environment on which apps can run. But it also has this lower level primitive of things like consensus, cryptographic security, to have this validator set bootstrapping. You need to have a token that has enough value for the validators to be incentivized, and so on. And it's just too much work to be doing again and again, right? It's like SpaceX built out this rocket that can land back. Otherwise, you need to have one rocket for each flight you send to, like for the spacecraft to go to space, for example. Like, I mean, just a random analogy I'm giving, but essentially to create like new chains, you don't need to bootstrap this set of validators every time, right? Like, you don't need to bootstrap the token every time. So you have this, the rollups are this construction where they have this secure base layer, and on top of which you do the execution innovation. Like, you leave the consensus, the validator bootstrapping, the security bootstrapping to the base layer. And so Ethereum is one example of that base layer. And we are going to see a few base layers come about like that. And of course, Avail wants to be in that position, in the sense powering a number of rollups on top of Avail. Of course, there's a lot of clever, creative ways in which this works. So rollups can be built, deployed on top of Avail, but they also can utilize Avail and Ethereum, for example, for separate purposes. So there's a lot of that thing that is going to come, for example. But yeah, that's a rough gist, but happy to get into more details.
Yeah, I really like the analogy of the motorbike, right? Being able to specialize in your specific part and really understand, you know, how to make a tire and that being your thing. I imagine like there's more complexity around that because that just sounds like an idealized scenario. Are there challenges around like the idea of like trusting different groups to specialize in their area? The second part of that question I want to ask is you kind of started to touch on the idea of Avail not just being this modular blockchain type thing, but also this idea of a unification layer, as I think how you describe it. Could you go into that a little bit more and explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, so as I said, blockchains have been constructed in a certain way, in a monolithic manner, and the modularization movement is still just starting to take shape. And so why go this route in the first place, right? Like I like to give this analogy on for like apps on the internet. Like apps on the internet don't really live on one single big supercomputer. They live on separate servers and are scaled independently based on demand. And so this notion that all apps on blockchain will just live on one single big blockchain, I don't think has any credence. In this, I'm pretty sure the evolution of blockchain apps will be very similar to how apps on the internet progressed, right? They will be housed in different servers and scaled independently. And the closest equivalent to a server in traditional tech is the rollup construct in blockchains. And so you will start off on these more general purpose rollups, but then you will specialize to be becoming more app specific and so on, essentially. So it's really from that angle that like we come from, yeah, in the sense that you are going to have to be specialized in some way so that the app developers don't need to focus on the entire stack. They will focus on the application. They will focus on the specific characteristics of what they want to build, how they want to get users. And all these other infrastructure providers will provide these different parts. And of course, all of them need to work together, right? Like, and so as with any other industry, it's a case of how do we connect these components together? So as in the motorcycle example, of course, every major motorcycle manufacturer has a specific interface to get the entire motorcycle in shape. And even if there's like few wheel manufacturers, these wheel manufacturers come to agreement on what standards to keep on the like the nuts and the bolts, for example, and so on. Right. So even though these components might be manufactured or like separately, you have this standardization that happens over time, right? Like it doesn't need to be one standard pushed by someone. It just comes about because that's how markets function, right? Like you need these components to work together, and that organically happens, of course.
Yeah, I really like the way you've described the kind of need for them. And I want to get maybe deeper into your philosophy. Like, I really like that you mentioned the need for standardization. And we often talk about blockchain as being like plumbing, and you're talking about these modules being kind of the nuts and bolts that need standardizing, which is a nice way of talking about it. I just want to like double click on there. You were talking about the kind of need and motivation for multiple layer ones. And it sounds like I want to get deeper into your philosophy here. It sounds like you're thinking of the future as a multi L1 future, if I'm correct. And I think that's interesting because a lot of people that we've spoken to have maybe had a different view where they think maybe it'll just be one or two blockchains in the future, in the way the internet evolved to have a single global public internet. But you're talking about blockchains more like they're application specific. Is that right in your kind of philosophy?
So my philosophy is that what we currently know as layer ones, which are the more execution focused layer ones like Solana or Sui or Phantom or many of these blockchains, like I think they will still be relevant, but maybe like only a few will be very relevant from the current crop of L1s. The most prominent layer ones will be chains that support rollups on top. So certainly Ethereum, for example, but of course, like I'm biased, like Avail will be one of those other L1s in general. And all of this will be very rollup focused, in service of rollups. And rollups will be the primary interface which users interact with. Avail and Ethereum, for example, like today users directly interact on Ethereum, which may or may not continue, but it, like broadly the majority of the usage will shift to the rollups, not on the underlying layer ones. So that's the world that I see we are going towards. So certainly a few L1s, but not the L1s that you think in general. Like it'll be like those layer ones that kind of power these rollups. And in terms of an analogy, right, if you look at, let's say, financial systems in general. So let's say in the UK, for example, I'm not very clear on the entities, but in general, like the central bank, for example, right, like the central bank runs some sort of payment settlement system between the banks. It might be government owned or privately owned, but it's like a private layer between these banks, for example, and users don't really use those rails directly. Banks build abstractions systems on top on which, you know, then customers are able to do transactions, whether within the same bank or from one bank to another, for example, and so on. And so the interaction between the central bank and the other banks, that is a very, that's a network that's not used daily by customers, for example. It's mostly to do with coordination between a few parties, and users have other systems. So I think maybe Monzo builds out this great system which allows for instant money transfer between two users, for example, or a Venmo in the US, for example, and so on. It's not an exact analogy, but there are these lower level systems which consumers, regular consumers, don't touch. So I think the blockchain ecosystem will move to that, and the rollups will be the more consumer facing infrastructure.
That's really interesting. And I quite like the idea of rollups as the kind of where most of the activity is done. I guess if, say, rollups are solving for probably scalability, cost, throughput, and potentially privacy as well, these are the big things that I think most consumers and most people care about when they think about what blockchain they want to use, then what does the kind of the characteristics that become important of the layer ones that actually power that? What do you think that we're going to be deciding upon when it comes to the layer one that's actually underpinning all this? Is it just security? Is it just like the decentralization factor, or what else is involved in that?
So certainly decentralization of the L1 is pretty important. How verifiability is going to be very important. Because essentially what we are talking about is there is this layer one, and then there's a layer two, the rollup, for example. And the rollup has to provide some data back to the layer one, and it should be able to verify it pretty quickly, for example. This is more to do with how these systems are designed, but essentially security, decentralization, verifiability, all of these are important. And that's why at Avail, we build this innovation called Datability Sampling, that allows our users to light lines to verify the data availability guarantees, for example, and so on. And there's various different levels of verification that you require. You require execution verification. This is handled by ZKPs or validity proofs, for example, and so on. So there's a bunch of stuff, but I think the main access would be, yes, decentralization, security, verifiability, and so on. I think I just want to point out like one very important point as well. Like when we think about these blockchains, used to be this construct where there is a transaction that goes to a blockchain node, and this then transaction is then propagated to, let's say, 1,000 or 100,000 nodes, and each of them verifies and then comes to consensus on which is the right state transition or correct output, for example. So that is the more traditional way things have been done. But over the last 3-4 years, things like ZKPs or zero knowledge proofs, these have progressed rapidly, much more than any of us anticipated. Of course, we were working on this. We knew this would become a reality. But no one, like when we started the development of ZKEVM back in like 2020, 2021, we didn't expect this would be finished in a couple of years. The ZKEVM was launched in 2023. And why am I saying this is like ZKPs change the way blockchains will be constructed in the future, or already changing, because with ZKPs or validity proofs, you don't need this network of 1,000 nodes to take your transaction and then verify them independently, like how it happens in Bitcoin, for example, right? Like this is this solid mathematical guarantee that, okay, there are these transactions and I run these machines to create this mathematical proof that gives you like this robust security guarantee. So in a blockchain, I'm getting into a little bit more theory, but there are these concepts of safety and liveness. Now, if you are especially if you're a ZK rollup, you actually don't need to rely on any other system for safety guarantees, because the ZKP has a mathematical proof of the safety of the transactions of the rollup. So as long as, of course, the ZKP system is working fine, the ZK rollup doesn't have to worry about safety. And so the danger of the blockchain changing the rollup state on its own is actually not a very big concern once you're transitioning into a ZK sort of a rollup. And so then the only thing that you need to focus on are things like liveness, for example, and so on. And so that necessitates a change in how we evaluate these newer constructions. So you don't really need these ZK rollups to have like thousands of sequencers or operators. Like you can actually get away with one or maybe a few sequencers or operators who run this blockchain, but because they provide this ZKP, zero knowledge proof, you can be sure that they will not be able to change the state or steal funds or things like that. Like you might be able to make the rollup stop. It will not be able to steal funds, for example.
Well, that's a really interesting point you make. And it gets to what you were saying at the start, right, about the modular blockchain world being more efficient potentially in this more economies of scale world. Because as you said, in the old monolithic blockchains, you have many thousands of validators or miners potentially. And there's a level of redundancy there, right? Duplication of work. You have the world computer Ethereum with lots of people repeating the same work. And there's a question, at what point is that redundant work wasteful work, yeah, right? And a part of the potentially the reason for moving to proof of stake. So I want to ask you then, let's assume we're in your kind of ideal future and Avail is one of the kind of major L1s. Can you explain what actually are the modules in this modular ecosystem of Avail and how do they kind of work in concert? I know there's Avail DA, which I think stands for data availability. There's also Fusion Nexus. So what exactly are these components and how do they work together?
So Avail DA is the data availability network that we are launching pretty soon. In general, that is the component that focuses on providing scalability to rollups. So rollups require a data availability service to provide this at scale. Traditionally, the rollups first started appearing on Ethereum and they used to use Ethereum for data availability. Now it is possible to swap for a rollup or like construction to utilize Avail for the data availability component, and they can still keep using Ethereum for proof verification and settlement and so on. So broadly, you have the Avail DA component that focuses on this specific feature called data availability. Is a little hard to explain pretty simply, but essentially you can think of it as a ordering as a service. So any blockchain has this functionality of accepting transactions and ordering it in a certain manner. And the order is very important because if you change the order of the transactions, the result can change. And so a lot of blockchain theory and implementation focuses on the ordering, and really Avail infrastructure or data availability focuses on implementing that ordering component for blockchains or rollups in general. And so Avail DA has also this like component called data availability sampling, which provides easy verification whether Avail has done its job properly or not, for example. And so we start with that because it immediately gives rollup scale on how much capacity or throughput that they can handle, for example. And it downstream, it makes user transaction fees less or inexpensive. But we don't stop there. So as we kind of move from this many L1s sort of world to a fewer L1s, but thousands of rollups sort of a future, it also introduces, like, we kind of can get into this problem of UX fragmentation, because like if you see something like L2Bit, for example, there are these probably 100 chains that are listed, and people have to now think about using this chain and that chain, switching RPCs on wallets and bridging tokens from one chain to the other. And so it's a lot of cognitive overload for users to be thinking about that. And so if we want to make Ethereum's rollup-centric roadmap successful, like this whole modular movement to be successful, we also need to kind of solve the problems of how users interact with these rollups or multiple chains. And so we build Nexus, which utilizes our primitives of data availability at the base layer to connect these rollups together to make what we call as the unification initiative, where we have these rollups, even though they are operating independently, we connect these together so that once we build all this infra out, for example, if users want to do something across two chains, for example, a user has funds on one chain, but they want to, let's say, buy an NFT on another chain. Right now, the user has to bridge their funds from this chain to that chain and then buy the NFT, for example, and then maybe bridge the NFT also across. Once the Avail Nexus build out is done, what we want to offer experience to users is to just be able to say to their wallet, saying that, okay, I want to buy this NFT on this other chain. I have these funds on this chain, figure out what to do. And then the wallet can talk to the Avail Nexus and it finds out that the funds are on chain A and it needs to be bridged. And so all of this happens in the backend. The user doesn't need to worry about this. And so I think basically with modular, we are moving into this more fragmented landscape. And so we need to be thinking about how not to make life, people's life harder, right? Like as it is, using blockchains is not that easy. And once we scale, we also need to think about connecting or interoperability in that sense to make this infrastructure more abstracted. And so essentially what we do is, like one of our friends at Connects, for example, says that scaling is actually an interoperability problem. So certainly having more rollups is great, but having them operate independently in silos is also not good. So that's what why we build all these pieces together, and they are part of this coherent roadmap that we have.
That's really exciting. I think like you see so much in this space, there's kind of the sunken cost fallacy where someone's been in one network for their entire life. And even if there's problems, they will stay in that network just because of the amount they've invested in it. And I really like that you've taken a step back and you think, okay, well, there's actually problems across the board here. And everyone's talking about interoperability, but they've spent 10 years like completely diving into this ecosystem that doesn't work with this other ecosystem. Interoperability is really the problem here. And no one's going to migrate from one network to the other when all their customer base is there. And one of the things that comes with the idea of actually fixing all these problems is that this is a really ambitious project, right? And I think related to that, I think you have an announcement that you might want to talk a little bit about, that about a funding round that just happened.
Yeah, of course. I mean, our vision is pretty ambitious, and we've done enough infrastructure building in the past to take on this problem of this huge scale. And so I'm thankful that, you know, like investors also agree. And so we recently closed this capital financing round that will help us bring this vision to life in general. And so we have some of the best investors in the space, including Founders Fund, Dragonfly, Cyber Fund, and others, a variety of others supporting us on this journey to bring this vision to the future. Essentially, just taking a step back, right? I actually live in Dubai. And I mean, of course, I can take a lot of other examples, but essentially, if you look at a lot of historical examples, one of the ways to make a city successful or like popular when you don't have network effects is to connect other popular cities together, for example, right? Like, so you, like when Dubai initially started developing, it decided to be like this hub of activity. So initially it was this whole seaside port, for example, and then it focused on making this the airline hub. And so now, of course, people don't think too much about it, but Dubai is like this hub between the West and the East, for example. And so the analogy is that, like, you have these ecosystems that do their own thing, and but you need this to be connected to make each, all of them valuable, but also then, like, you use that strategy to make the hub valuable, right? And so we are thinking about it in that manner.
I love that description of the kind of hub connecting people, because again, as you said, most of the value of lots of these things in Web3 does come from network effects, from building communities of users who are getting genuine value out of all these projects. So at the end of the day, if they're not delivering some value for the real users in the real world, right, and people like our grandparents, then it's actually, these things aren't going to be successful. So I think it's good that you bring it back to that. I'm conscious that we've talked a lot about the abstract and the technical detail, and there's a lot more we haven't covered. I think you've done a great job of keeping it high level, even though it's very difficult to do that with such technical things. But I'd like to just get your outlook for the future, not from a technical perspective, but in terms of the kind of use cases and outcomes you want to see from Web3 in general, and from, you know, a successful Avail project and a successful L1 scaling. What kind of things do you want to see people use Web3 for? What are you most excited to see in the hands of the everyday user going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think about this question a lot in general. Like, why are we building all this for, right? I mean, there's a variety of teams working on different problems, building different types of infrastructures and apps. And essentially, I like to think of this as infrastructure that is building the next generation of trust systems. So if you look at society as a whole, how it has progressed, and especially the role of trust in society. A few hundred years back, people used to live in small communities and their circle of trust was the community. And interactions outside of the community were limited in that sense. And as we have seen the progression of society and how society has progressed economically, socially, like society is very wealthy or more progressive compared to, you know, the past. And why that has happened is with the advent of technology, it has broken barriers of trust, especially things like technology have increased the circle of trust. So much so that you can sit in the UK today and order something from China or the US, for example, and expect that people will not run away with your funds, or you will actually get the goods, for example. And so as the circle of trust has increased, the economic and social coordination of what people can do, that has increased. I mean, we are right now sitting probably thousands of kilometers away discussing this on a medium that allows us to interact with each other almost seamlessly. And I think as a consequence, you have that, you have this bifurcation of countries in general. So there are some societies or countries with very high trust societies and some countries with low trust societies. And historically, high trust societies have done well for themselves in general. So the point I'm trying to make is that all this infrastructure building is for the purpose of this next generation of trust systems. Because if you look at any important systems that coordinate trust, it's through some sort of trusted intermediary. Now, these trusted intermediaries have been especially useful. But if some of these intermediaries don't behave, then you have like adverse problems. So of course, like a lot of the trusted systems in developing countries work most of the time. In lesser developed countries, not most of the time, for example, right? Like, and even in developed countries, like something like the NASDAQ or the NYSE, if you trade a stock, for example, you still get the stock after T plus two, like 2 days after the trade, for example. And the reason is because there is a complex set of intermediaries sitting behind the system doing a lot of things like settlement of stocks, settlement of funds, custody. So if you kind of zoom out a bit, the world runs on ledgers. These ledgers are run by different intermediaries. And any interaction, economic or social, is one ledger talking to another ledger. If people are on the same ledger, it's pretty easy. If you are on, let's say, WhatsApp or something like that, it's pretty easy. If you're on Venmo, it's pretty easy. But if you want a Venmo user to talk to a Monzo user in the UK, like, you have to cross a lot of ledgers. And that's where the latency, like the delay, comes from. So essentially, like, blockchains brings that problem to the forefront. Like, it tries to build this unified ledger where a lot of these parties can now coordinate directly, for example, without having one ledger to talk to another ledger, for example, and so on. So that's really what I consider like blockchains to be doing. So of course, improving efficiency where systems are might be already working, but in places where that is not working, then giving access to better systems for society as a whole to progress. So that's what I really see the blockchain industry in general, and of course, Avail to be powering that as well.
I love that, Anurag. I think me and Jack love it when we can talk technology and philosophy in one episode, and you've just done that really well. And I think there's a quote by Feynman, and I think it was Einstein also said a similar thing, where it's like, if you can explain something to a 10-year-old, then you really understand the thing. And clearly you really understand the thing because you've explained it so well there. And I completely agree. Like, in this increasingly globalized world, like, trust is often facilitated by intermediaries, big companies everyone knows. But how do you trust those intermediaries? Who's holding them to account? I think more and more we are going to have to rely on blockchain and zero knowledge proofs to actually ensure that trust is guaranteed. And that's why it's so powerful. There's very few companies when you say, okay, why are you doing this? They can give a really good, simple answer. But it's really clear to me why you're doing what you're doing. And thank you for that great explanation. Well, this has been a really great episode. We're coming to the closing section now. So in this section, we like to ask two questions to see how they vary between guests and how they vary across time. So the first one is, in one sentence, what is Web3 to you?
I think Web3 is, as I said, building better society through trust. That's really the gist of Web3 or blockchains in general, right? Essentially, this technology will help humanity get to a place where things can be much better for everyone on the planet.
I like that. That's a kind of a hopeful one. I like that very much. And the second question is, maybe you, I don't know if you're going to put your tech hat on or your philosopher hat on, but if you could choose anyone in the world or throughout history or even fictional to sit down and discuss Web3 with, who would it be and why?
I think basically I would do it with probably someone like Liu Yongqiu, who was like the Prime Minister of Singapore for a long time. And I really like him for some of his views on how to develop countries in general. And really, he's a personality who took Singapore, which was like a very small village sort of, to this very important global city. And some people might call him very authoritarian, but he got things done. He got Singapore to a place where it is, for example. And he had like very specific ideas on how to kind of structure countries, structure societies. And that's a very big problem. And you have to juggle things like democracy and progress together, for example. And so I would say someone like him would really appreciate blockchains in general in their role in how to coordinate progress at global scale, but still keeping human values in mind. So maybe that would be someone.
Nice.
It's a really interesting answer. I think I'll definitely have to read up more on him. But it's interesting that it's, again, bringing into the fore Singapore, another hub that connects people globally, I think, dovetailing with your answer as earlier. So yeah, really interesting one. Listen, Anurag, it's been such an interesting episode. Thank you so much for joining us. I know I've learned a lot and I have lots to go and research now. And congratulations again for the funding round, which I believe was only announced today. It's very fresh, and congratulations for that. And yeah, all that remains is for us to say to our audience, thank you very much for listening, wherever you may be. And you can join us next time to untangle a little more Web3.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Untangling Web3, produced by Emma Camilleri.
Don't forget to send us your thoughts, questions, and comments on social media, and be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider to catch the next episode. See you next time to untangle a little bit more of Web3.
The views we express here are our own and do not reflect the views of our employers.